You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Henny McKell's novels have been translated into 40 languages. They've sold over 30 million copies worldwide, and they've been made into a popular TV series starring Kenneth Branagh as Inspector Kurt Wallander. But Wallander is nowhere to be found in his latest novel, The Man from Beijing, which begins with a horrific crime in a Swedish village and spans almost 150 years in four continents. It's published by Knopp, and I'm very pleased that it brings Henny McKell back to our show today. Hello.
Hello, it's nice to be back.
Am I pronouncing your famous detective's name correctly?
Yeah.
Wallander?
Yeah. Out of 10, I would give you a 9.
Oh, thank you. As in your Wallander novels, this book begins with a brutal crime. In this case, the murder of 19 people, mostly elderly, hacked to death with a sword in a tiny Swedish hamlet. Has anything like that ever occurred in Sweden?
I hope not. But, I mean, everyone who... I know that for a fact that people living in that area, they are quite proud of that area being used in my novel because everyone knows for sure that what I write is fiction.
Well, are the murders in your books usually more violent than those that happen in real life in Sweden?
No, I would say like this. Whatever I write, reality is always worse. I could never in my imagination find out such things that reality brings us, unfortunately.
You've introduced a new detective in this book, a judge named Birgitta Roslin. Why did you want to have a judge at the center of the story?
Well, first of all, my father was a judge. And I have never, ever used that experience. And now, finally, I thought that maybe I should use a judge as a main character.
Did he want you to go into law as well?
Oh, no, he never said anything about that. But in order to distance myself from the memory of my father, I chose to make the judge a woman.
Hmm. Well, would putting a judge at the center of a crime investigation make more sense to non-Americans? Because judges play a different role in the judicial process in most European countries.
Exactly.
In this country, we have the judges who are just there at the end of the whole process after the detectives and the prosecutors and the lawyers have been involved for a while.
Yes, it's true. And first, also, maybe the most important difference is that in Sweden we don't have a system of the jury. So my father was sitting there alone, actually, and decide what should be done with someone.
Is that the only role that a judge in Sweden plays in a criminal investigation?
In a way, yes. Yes.
It turns out that Birgitta is distantly related to the victims of the crime. And when she sees that the police seem to be ignoring important evidence, she takes it on herself to get involved and begin investigating. Are there disadvantages to having a detective who's not a police officer?
No, I think it is quite challenging because then you can write about how that person is searching into an area that is unknown and find ways how to deal with certain things. I think that's very challenging to write about.
Well, she doesn't have the resources that the police do. And police often feel that people who get involved in investigating crimes that they're supposed to be investigating are interfering and causing more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, and exactly this also happens in the book, that she meets a lot of resistance when she's asking questions, and then she has to find the answers herself.
But she also has a certain amount of freedom that the police don't have. She can travel anywhere she wants to follow the threads of the case.
That is true, but on the other hand, she's very alone in the work. She doesn't have anyone to trust or to discuss with.
She winds up going to Beijing. The title of the book is The Man from Beijing. Is that an odd experience for her? She was once a Maoist.
Yeah, this was also an interesting challenge for me to think that this woman in the past had a relation to China and what we called in Sweden the Maoists in the 60s. And so she's in a way also have to confront herself with her own past while trying to find out what on earth has happened here.
Would there be a different taint on somebody who was once a Maoist in Sweden? I mean, in this country, I don't think it'd be possible to be given a judgeship if you were once a communist and even more if you were once a Maoist.
Well, I would say that in Sweden it is possible today. You find people on high positions in Swedish society, and we all know that they had a very radical past. So that is one of the real decent things with the Swedish society, that you are not marked for life for what you did when you were young.
In another popular series of books, the Stieg Larsson's Millennium Trilogy, the hero is a leftist journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a different attitude in Sweden.
I would say yes. We never had what you had in the 50s, McCarthy and all these things. We never had such a thing. And so I think it wouldn't be possible to stop someone from having any kind of work because of what political views they had in the past, or even today, I would say.
In your Wallander novels, the crimes often have roots in other countries, but this book really has a global view. Do you think it's becoming impossible for even the most remote village to remain isolated from the rest of the world?
In a way, yes. I would say, I would like to turn it around a little to say, as you know, I spend a lot of time in Africa. I live in East Africa for 25, 30 years, and I have seen what the new technology does to people. I mean, you can sit in a small remote village somewhere in Africa, and with just a little electricity and a mobile phone, you can be in New York, you can be in the MoMA Museum. So I really think that we have come so much closer to each other, for good and for bad.
And in this book, the story eventually moves to Zimbabwe and Mozambique. Mozambique, where you have spent a part of every year for a while. How did you wind up there?
Oh, we have a saying in Sweden that if I should give an answer to that, we have to talk until the cows come home.
Well, we
use it in Sweden too. And I'll just give you a very short answer to it. When I was a very young author, I wanted to see the world from outside of the European egocentricity that brought me to Africa 40 years ago, and this is the reason why I still go back there.
Robert Mugabe, the troubling president of Zimbabwe, also makes an appearance in this story. How do you see his role in the Chinese economic colonization, or however you want to describe it, of Africa?
Well, to say about Robert Mugabe, I mean, everyone is agreeing on the fact that he acts crazily today. But what I think is that in the beginning of the creation of Zimbabwe in 1980, Robert Mugabe really tried to create the dialogue with the white farmers. They never listened to him. So I think what we not read in the media of the Western world is the fact that the white farmers are also to blame for the situation.
But he has created an economic disaster in his country,
yeah,
which we will discuss some other time.
That I agree, but there is another side of the coin too.
You recently wrote an essay decrying the way American celebrities go to Africa to be photographed with poor African children.
Yes, I was very angry. I saw a picture with, I forgot her name now.
Angelina Jolie?
No, it was another. She's very blonde. I don't. Mia Farrow. And I really had the feeling that it was like seeing a picture taken 100 years ago with a white missionary with children. And I really find that, I'm sorry to say, that picture so disgusting.
Well, she's made a major commitment to the fight in Darfur, but others might argue that this is the only way that people in other countries are going to even pay much attention to what's going on in some of these troubled countries.
Well, I think that side of the story, it's fine, but there are certain things you shouldn't do. And I think, for example, if you compare what she does with what Bono does, Bono does something that I think is very good. He is attacking us for what we are not doing. He's not, in a way, standing with the African children around himself. He's doing something else, and I think that's better. Yeah.
My guest is Henning Mankell, whose latest book is The Man from Beijing, already an international bestseller, now available in English through Knopf. After the investigation into the mass murder begins at the beginning of the book, and maybe I'll ask you to read a little bit in a little while, you shift the story to China in 1863. where Chinese peasants are being abducted and brought to the United States to work on the Transcontinental Railroad. Is there a Swedish connection to that story?
It is indeed. We have to remember that over the years, more than, I think, about 1 million Swedes left for United States. And some of these people also were involved in the construction of the railroads. And that I found very interesting to use as a sort of historical perspective of what is happening today, that once upon a time, even the Chinese were some kind of slaves. And now when I have a feeling that there is a tendency among the Chinese to have a sort of colonial attitude to the Africans, then they have forgotten their own history, I think.
And you move the story to Beijing in the present day, where one of the descendants of the Chinese peasants has become a wealthy businessman. Did you go to China as well?
Oh, yes.
So this is fun. You could, if you want to visit some place, you can conceive it as part of a story. And I mean, if you want to do Outer Mongolia, you just go to Outer Mongolia and put it in your next novel. No?
In principle, yes, I could. No, one should say that the first time I was in China was in 1978, which is one generation ago, and that was Maoist times. And then I have visited China regularly, because obviously for me and for you is that what is happening in China, every human being, every fifth human being a Chinaman or a woman, obviously it has something to do with our life.
You've been credited with pioneering the literary genre now called Nordic noir, which has become very popular in recent years. Why do you think that thrillers from Sweden, Norway, even Iceland have such universal appeal? I mean, we think of those countries as not having terribly high crime rates.
I have desperately tried to find an intelligent answer to that question, and I do not have it. I really think it is merely a coincidence, really.
And now we have Stieg Larsson, the popularity of the three films that have been made from his Millennium trilogy. Did you know him?
No, I never met him. I met him once, I think. Once.
The Wallander novels have been made into a TV series starring Kenneth Branagh. They've been running on PBS stations here. Have you been pleased with the results?
Oh, yes, indeed. And obviously BBC has also been very pleased, because I think I can tell you as news today that BBC are now planning to do six more.
He doesn't exactly look like the character I've met in your books. He's a little thinner.
Well, I think, honestly, everyone probably has his own image of Wallander. But what I think Kenneth Branagh is doing, he's doing his really, really own Wallander. And that I like very much.
Well, what about Wallander? Have you retired him for good, or will he be back for another book?
Well, this is another kind of news I can give you, and that is next year it will be published here in the United States, a new Wallander book that's already out in Europe, and the title will probably be The Worried Man.
Mm-hmm. Well, aren't you also bringing his daughter, who just began her police career, into the books?
I have already done that, but it happened something very strange and very tragic, if I can tell you. It was that first novel with the daughter was made into a movie. And there was an excellent young actress doing the role. And after the end of the shooting, she committed suicide. No one understands why or anything.
Oh, she was depressed.
A terrible tragedy. So now it has ended up for me, it's difficult in a way to know what to do with this. If I'm going to write about her again, I really don't know.
Well, you were here to talk about that book, Before the Frost.
Exactly.
You've also written dozens of plays, books for children, nonfiction books, non-crime novels. Have they all been translated into English?
Not all, but quite many, and it's more to come.
And what about the plays? Have they ever been produced here?
Never in the Yes, something in the West Coast, I think, but merely my plays are done in Europe.
Can you give us a little taste of the book? You have the first page open. Would
yes,
you read for us?
I will do that. This is the very beginning of the novel, and the novel is about people, So therefore, I've started to write about an animal. The chapter is called The Epitaph. Frozen snow, severe frost, midwinter. Early in January 2006, a lone wolf crosses the unmarked border and enters Sweden from Norway. A man on a snowmobile thinks he might have glimpsed it, but the wolf vanishes into the trees, heading east before he's able to pinpoint it. In the remote Norwegian mountains, it had discovered a lump of frozen moose carcass with remnants of meat still clinging to the bones. But that was more than 2 days ago. It is beginning to feel the pain of hunger and is desperately searching for food. The wolf is a young male that has set out to find a territory of his own. In the early morning of January 13th, the wolf reaches Hirschevallen, a tiny village south of a lake in Hälsingland. He pauses and sniffs the air. He detects the smell of blood. He looks around. There are people living in the houses, but no smoke rising from the chimneys. His sharp ears can't detect the slightest sound. But the wolf is in no doubt about the blood. He skulks at the edge of the forest, nose in the air. Then he moves forward silently through the snow. The smell comes from one of the houses at the far end of the hamlet. He is vigilant now. With humans around, it's essential to be both careful and patient. He finds another carcass. He drags his large meal back to the trees. He has not been discovered. The wolf starts eating when he comes to the edge of the trees. It's easy as the flesh has not yet frozen. He's very hungry. Having pulled off a leather shoe, he starts gnawing away at an ankle.
The wolf is the discoverer of the mass murder that begins Henning Mankell's latest book to be offered in this country. By Knopf, translated by Laurie Thompson. It's called The Man from Beijing. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.